You're listening to Civic Media. You can tune into any of our live shows on any radio station across the state with the Civic Media app. Find us in your phone's app store and listen anytime, anywhere.
Trying to change the world here on WMDX 92.7. Here in Madison, you can join the conversation by calling 608-879-8255. I'm Matt Rothschild, subbing in here for John and Gordy, and also subbing in is Angela Lang, my favorite co-host. She's the executive, now the co-executive director of BLOC, Black Leaders Organizing for Communities. It's a beautiful sunrise right now in Madison, and I want to just drop a couple lines of verse in case I forget, because we always bring poetry and birds into our conversation. This is from William Blake. He who binds himself to a joy does the winged life destroy, but he who kisses the joy as it flies lives in eternity's sunrise. So it's a beautiful sunrise, and kiss that joy as it flies. And we're going to be talking birds at 7:36 to the end of the session, maybe, with Dexter Patterson, who's got a book coming out, just came out, called Birds of the Great Lakes. He is the co-founder of the Wisconsin BIPOC Birding Club. So, been waiting to talk to him, too. And right now, I'm delighted to have back in the studio with us Chris Tazelar. He's the Media and Public Relations Manager at Second Harvest Food Bank of Southern Wisconsin. Welcome back to the show.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Oh, it's always great to see you, and it's important to talk to you and issues of food insecurity, especially at this time of year, but year-round also. I imagine it's been a tricky year over at Second Harvest, especially with the withholding of SNAP benefits in the fall. How's it been for you?
Yeah, I mean, tricky is definitely one way to describe it, because, you know, with the government shutdown, with the delay in the food share benefits, it was kind of a, you know, both two-edged coin, right? It shone a light on the number of people who are food insecure here in Southern Wisconsin, but then it also had kind of a devastating impact, you know, certainly on the folks who were directly impacted. Now, luckily, the SNAP benefits were only cut back by about a week, which was thanks to the governor. But you know, that light that was put upon the issue really kind of reminded the public that people are struggling with hunger here in southwestern Wisconsin, and there are places like Second Harvest and our network of partner agencies and programs who really need their support. And so the public has really responded.
What is that number of people who are going hungry or food insecure, as it's called?
Yeah, in our 16 counties that we support, it's about 147,000 people who do struggle with hunger, and about 40,000 of those are kids. So it's not an insignificant number. It's about 1 in 9 when you think of all ages. And so it's our neighbors. It's the kids who are in class with our kid, you know, in school. It's the seniors. And so it really touches every community. And so that's why Second Harvest is here.
Yeah, that's a lot of people. That's a ridiculous, scandalous percentage, right, Angela?
Yeah, It's a moral failing. I'm sorry. It is. And I'm also curious too, because I don't think that this is going away anytime soon. It feels like things are only going to get worse and worse. I'm curious of how, you know, you're wrestling with this kind of like instability, even internally. Like, yes, the government shut down, the government is now reopened, but are we going to be in that same situation in a couple more months? Are we still going to have cuts to SNAP in the future? And I can assume it's very hard to kind of plan, right, with that level of instability and back and forth. How do you wrestle with that? And are there ways that community members can also show up and support too?
You know, you ask a great question, and really, I've been at Second Harvest now a little over 14 years, and there has been, you know, the instability that you talk about, you know, throughout the years, really since I started. We never quite know what situation is going to be happening out in the world, and we never know how people are going to respond to that. We know that during the pandemic, for example, people really, really responded to Second Harvest. They knew that there was, you know, tens of thousands of people who were struggling prior to the pandemic, but now they're struggling even at the time they were struggling even worse. But the reality is, we're actually putting out more food now than we were at the height of the pandemic. In fact, almost twice as much food. At the height of the pandemic, we were putting out about 1 million pounds of food a month, and now we're a little over 2 million pounds of food a month. And that's kind of surprising to the general public. They would have thought, oh, height of the pandemic, that was the height of hunger, and now we're kind of on this downslide, and it's really the exact opposite. And, you know, about 70% of our partner agencies recently reported more people walking through their doors. Some of those were talking about, 30, 40, 50, even 100% increases in the number of people walking through their doors seeking assistance. So we never quite know what's going to happen. And in terms of how do we react, how do we respond? Well, one, we need to be nimble. We need to, you know, we really showed our ability to be nimble during the pandemic. We went to a whole different type of distribution where it had to be contactless, right? And so, we really reacted to that need to be nimble, and we need to do that all the time. And the reality is that with the government shutdown and the delay in SNAP benefits, yes, it impacted temporarily, but I think that the bigger impact really started December 1st. Because that's when those new requirements for getting those food share benefits across the state of Wisconsin really took place. And so we're just now starting to see, well, what is going to happen? Are we going to see more people walking into our partner agency doors? And so we need to be prepared to meet that increase. And the only way we can do that is through a response by the public.
Those new rules could be devastating for people, though, right?
Yeah.
I mean, they are significant. Jumping up to 80 hours that you need to prove that you're either working or volunteering or in training, and that going from age, you know, from the top end age used to be 54, now it's 64. We're certainly anticipating that is going to have a significant impact with our partner agencies, and so we just have to find ways to make sure we can respond.
Yeah, that's just a brutal change. Angela Lang mentioned the moral failing that hunger in Wisconsin and hunger in America is. It's also a social, economic, political failing. And you talk about that at Second Harvest. We're talking with Chris Taslar. He's the media and public relations manager over at Second Harvest Food Bank of Southern Wisconsin. On your website, you talk about some root causes here. And you all at Second Harvest aren't deaf to those. Do you want to talk about those a little bit?
Yeah, some of the root causes that we really focus on are affordable health care, affordable housing, and access to kind of living wage jobs. And when you take those all into account, you really need to address those before you can really have this sense of, oh yeah, we can solve hunger permanently. But until we resolve those, until it doesn't cost somebody $10,000 out of pocket to go to an emergency room, until you can solve some of those things, unfortunately, I don't know that we're going to ever be able to solve it in terms of being able to like end hunger, because those challenges will always exist. You'll always have the senior who lives beyond, you know, what they may have saved for after retirement. You're always going to have the individual who is less than fully able, so they can't work, and yet they don't have enough income in order to support, you know, kind of a thriving life. And so that's what we're here to try to do, is to do our part, but we know it's going to take more.
I'm just wondering, it must be tricky for you, or, a little bit of conflict, knowing that the crisis is so large, and that the issues you're dealing with, and you're just doing patchwork here. It's more in Band-Aids, but
feels like that sometimes.
You know, finger in the dike, you know, there's just a huge amount of water coming, and you're just putting one finger to plug one little hole. That must be frustrating to some extent.
It can certainly be challenging, because, with the dedication to those three issues that we talked about, and I didn't even mention systemic racism.
Right.
I mean, that has huge socioeconomic impacts, you know, all up and down the line. And so, but the reality is, what can Second Harvest really do about any of those very huge socioeconomic issues? We can only do what we can do, and we're really, really good at providing food. But what can we truly do about affordable healthcare? What can we truly do about affordable housing? And the other challenges. And so, yes, it can feel like that, but we're still here to plug the dikes that we can plug, but we can only do that through the support of the public.
And doing really important work over at Second Harvest Food Bank of Southern Wisconsin. You are in Southern Wisconsin, Southwestern Wisconsin, not Southeastern Wisconsin. Is there a comparable organization or group of organizations? Angela's in Milwaukee, for instance.
Yeah, in the Milwaukee area, it's Feeding America Eastern Wisconsin. They actually cover, I want to say it's 36 counties on the eastern side of the state. We cover 16 counties. But we are a peer food bank and member of Feeding America. Okay. It's we're completely separate 501c3s. We're separate entities, but it's like an association membership, right? And there is an associated food bank in that covers every county in the United States. And so there's I think four food banks that cover counties in Wisconsin. The two biggest would be Second Harvest and Feeding America Eastern Wisconsin.
And so you all work together in a way. You're collegial. And
oh, absolutely. We're sharing food all the time. We're sharing opportunities to raise funds. And we try to share as much as we possibly can. We learn from each other because, you know, why reinvent the wheel when it comes to trying to end hunger? We're not competitors. We are, we're truly peers.
Well, it looks like we have a call, so let's take the call. Who do we have, Dom?
We have Catherine Lake.
Catherine Lake. How are you doing this morning, Catherine?
Thanks for taking the time. I just have a quick question. Food banks, I did some volunteering in Illinois and Chicago for a while. You know, we got a chance to go to food banks and help them do whatever, sort, move, create packages. Is there an opportunity like that with your organization, possibly?
Oh, we couldn't do what we do without volunteers. About 25% of all the work that is done on behalf of Second Harvest is done by a volunteer. And so we've got volunteer shifts at our distribution center on Madison's southeast side, basically, off of Flom Road, every day of the week. Well, not Sundays, but Monday through Friday, certainly we've got a couple of shifts, and we even every once in a while we'll have a Saturday shift. So just go out to our website, secondharvestsw.org, and you can learn all about our volunteer opportunities. And the reality is, you know, we work with about 300 partner agencies and programs throughout the 16 counties, and they also rely on volunteers. And so there's a multitude of volunteer opportunities where you can, really make a difference.
Thanks, Catherine, for that call. And people also can donate, I imagine, to Second Harvest Food Bank. And how would they do that?
They can very much donate to us. For every $20 donated, we can actually provide 5 bags of groceries. And so they can really make a difference with their dollar as well.
And just go to the website for that.
Correct. SecondHarvestSW.org.
Well, Chris Tazlar, thanks so much for being with us. Chris is with Second Harvest Food Bank of Southern Wisconsin. And we'll be right back to talk about some court cases in Wisconsin for a few minutes before we get to birds at 7:36.
You're listening to Civic Media. Stay up to date on the latest news and information for your local community and Wisconsin by signing up for our free email newsletter. Visit civicmedia.us/email to get started.
Hey, Matt Rothschild here in Mad City on the John and Gordy in the Morning show. The guys are off this morning, but they're back this afternoon from 2 to 5 all across the Civic Media Radio Network. And I'm here with you until 8 o'clock with my co-host, Angela Lang, the co-executive director of BLOC, Black Leaders Organizing for Communities. It was great having Chris Tazlar from Second Harvest here, giving a sense of what it's like to be on the front lines of this issue of hunger in Wisconsin, hunger in America, doing what they can to prevent the nasty consequences of bad public policies that they're dealing with. And, you know, the numbers were pretty dramatic. They're 9% of people in Wisconsin. Yeah.
I was surprised to hear them say that their monthly amount of food that they give out has like doubled from the pandemic. And I think, yeah, there's this idea that things were so bad in the pandemic that even when things are bad now, it's still probably a little bit better. And that's not the case, right? And I think that's a very important point, right? That like, we're in it for the long haul. Like, this is a long-standing issue.
Yeah, and as you pointed out, it's going to get worse. And one of the reasons it's going to get worse is those work requirements that were imposed in that bill that went through Congress. So we had a text from Mark from Prairie du Sac reading from Charles Dickinson's Christmas Carol. Here's the quote that he pulled out of it, which is kind of amazing. "At this festive season of the year, Mr. Scrooge, it is more than usually desirable that we should make some light provisions for the poor and the destitute who suffer greatly at the present time. Many thousands are in want of common necessaries," said the character in this Dickens book. "Hundreds of thousands are in want of common comforts." And as Mark said in the end of his text, "as true in Dickens's day as today." So true. Thank you, Mark. Mark from Prairie du Sac, who is a faithful listener to WMDX and Civic Media and often has wonderful calls. You can call or text yourself if you'd like at 608-879-8255 here on 92.7 WMDX. Matt Rothschild with Angela Lang with you. And Angela, in the news over the last 24 hours or so, there was this court case with some of the defendants in this effort in Wisconsin to invalidate our voting in 2020. This was the conspiracy by the false electors and their legal advisors. Well, the legal advisors are now defendants in a court case here in Dane County. Jim Troupas, Kenneth Cheesebro, and Michael Roman, those are the three people who are standing trial. And after a day-long hearing yesterday, I'm reading from Molly Beck's report from the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. Dane County Judge John Hyland ruled there's enough evidence to move forward with a trial in the case against Jim Troupas and Michael Roman, a former attorney. Troupas, former attorney and former Dane County judge for a year or two, if you can believe that. And then he joined the conspiracy. And Roman was an aide to Trump for their roles in this conspiracy with the false electors. The false electors themselves were never charged by Attorney General Josh Call. I wish they had been. I wish Josh Call had gotten on that. But at least he went after somebody, finally. And the judge, according to Molly Beck, is considering evidence separately against Kenneth Cheesebro, who also former Trump attorney, who is one of the geniuses behind this anti-democracy conspiracy of the false electors. Finally, there might be some accountability here, though, Angela. I'm hoping for some.
Yeah, I mean, that was my first reaction, was like, okay, wow, finally. I know the court system moves slow, but I'm like, okay, finally. And as someone that has been, you know, a diehard, I guess, antagonist of Bob Spindell, I'm like, there's some names missing from this list. I wish that the fake electors were also on there as well, because they definitely had a responsibility and a role to play. And I know there was some agreement where Bob Spindell had to say that he won't do it again and he was sorry. But to me, that's not any level of accountability. I do think it's a step in the right direction, but I'm like, we got to do more.
And Bob Spindell was not only one of the false electors, he still sits on the Wisconsin Elections Commission, which is incredible. He also published a racist email bragging about the efforts by the Republican Party in the Milwaukee area to
lower black turnout,
disenfranchise black and Latino turnout.
They bragged about it
by suppressing the vote. And so, you know, the lack of accountability for him, and there's been a call from many pro-democracy nonprofit groups to have him get off the Wisconsin Elections Board. And I testified once at one of their public hearings and told him to get off. Didn't do any good. He's still there. But maybe there'll be some accountability for Troupas and Cheesebro and Michael Roman. It should be accountability time. I mean, the fact that we don't have accountability with Trump because Merrick Garland kicked that case is going to haunt us for a long time. But here we could have the possibility of accountability for the lead conspirators in the false electors plot. Thankfully, Josh Call has brought a case against them. Thankfully, Dane County Judge John Hyland is staying on the case, did not accept Troupas's wish for him and every other judge in Dane County to get off the case, which was an outrageous attempt to dodge responsibility by Troupas and a pretty pathetic legal maneuver that fortunately didn't work. So that's where we are on that case. That trial is continuing this week, and we'll have to see what happens. But I am begging for accountability. And we'll be back after the break with Angela Lang and also with Dexter Patterson, the co-founder of the BIPOC Wisconsin Birding Club and author of a cool new little book called Birds of the Great Lakes. So stay with us. Matt Rothschild and Angela Lang and Dexter Patterson right after. Hey, Matt Rothschild with you. That's Sean Michael Dargan with a little takeoff on the great song from Paul Simon. And I'm co-hosting this morning on the John and Gordy Show with Angela Lang, who is the now co-executive director of Black Leaders Organizing for Communities, BLOC, down in Milwaukee. And I always like to do some bird talk here in the last half hour of the show. We're hoping to get Dexter Patterson on. If and when he comes on, we'll jump right in. In the meantime, I want to just tell everyone, including you, Angela, about the tundra swans that have been congregating on Lake Minota and Lake Mendota. My wife and I drove around looking at them at Picnic Point, around Picnic Point on Lake Mendota just 2 days ago. There must have been 400 tundra swans there. And they were pretty close to where you put in your boat there, if you can just park your car there as we did, and you got great looks at these tundra swans. She was also at a party at a friend's house who lives near Lake Mendota, and the noise there was quite loud. We'll give you a sample of what that sounds like. So these are tundra swans that come down from the Arctic when things start to freeze up there, and they're looking for open water and food. And they are often in great numbers on Lake Mendota and some on Lake Minona here in the winter before the lakes freeze. So I was wondering if the lakes were going to freeze just in the sub-zero weather. I don't think they have yet. So there are still some tundra swans around. We used to call those whistling swans when I was growing up. That's what they were called in the old Roger Torrey Peterson book, which was my Bible as a geeky kid bird watcher, as I was. There have also been some sightings of trumpeter swans that look almost identical to whistling swans. They're a little bit bigger. Their neck is a little bit taller and straighter. They don't have any yellow on the bill as the whistling swans, tundra swans do. But you almost have to have them side by side to be able to figure out which is which. So beautiful birds. Some trumpeter swans nest at Horicon, which is great. Horicon here in Wisconsin is one of our great treasures. If you are in Madison and you can get to Lake Mendota to look for some tundra swans, now's the time to do them. And I think you can see them down in Milwaukee too, Angela.
Yeah, I was wondering, especially with like the cold and like the weather being so, you know, we were like, are we in for a rough winter? And we talked about this, I think maybe last winter sometime on air. I'm always curious about how like different climate, you know, patterns affect the migration of birds and how that like leads to delays or even reproduction if they're not able to find food. And as someone that's like not a birder, but like fascinated, I'm also thinking about like the climate change effects on, you know, our bird ecosystem too.
Yeah, we're seeing all sorts of different birds coming up. You know, people are seeing mockingbirds in the summer in Wisconsin, which is a southern bird.
So, Matt, I have a question for you. Do you have a pamphlet? Like, because I'm not too well versed with bird watching. Do you have like a pamphlet that you, if you see a bird, you check it off, or you kind of just, is that around what you do, or like how does watching work?
Yeah, well, you got an app now.
Yeah, you can do it. You can do it with your Merlin app. You can. There used to be in the old Roger Torrey Peterson Field Guide to the Eastern Birds of the United States. There used to be a checklist where the index, right after the index, where you could go in and check off the birds you'd seen. And a lot of birders have a so-called life list. How many birds have you seen in your life? And I used to keep that, but I gave it up. Shortly after coming to Madison when I was 23 or 24, I was birding at Picnic Point, which I was able to see a Prothonotary warbler for the first time there. And I was coming back from this little walk through Picnic Point, and I saw a middle-aged couple and asked them, what had they seen? Had they seen this, that, and the other? And this woman kind of scornfully said, oh, are you that kind of person? You've got to count every bird.
Oh.
It took took me back a step, but then I started to think, well, do I really need to just check off every bird that I've ever seen and then look for the next one? Because there's a problem if you're just one of those competitive seekers, and I'm a very competitive person, I grant you, but then you're not – I got to the point where I wasn't enjoying looking at the bird.
Sure.
I was just checking them off. And and so it kind of distorts the joy of bird watching. And I'm really right now, especially in my older years, into the joy of just seeing pretty birds. Even cardinals in the snow, I think, are just extraordinary. And so even a common bird like the cardinal, both the male and female, they're just beautiful and beautiful against the snow. So when I stopped counting, I started to appreciate them more. So that was kind of an epiphany for me.
I feel like if I were to ever go into this, I feel like I would have the same issue because I'm 22 as well. And I feel like I'm such a competitive person. I would do the exact same thing that I would just be like, oh, let's just check this off, check this off, check this off. And I wouldn't actually take the time to really look at the colors and how beautiful birds can be.
So. I mean, you could see the farcical nature of that in the Big Year, the movie The Big Year, where they're chasing birds to see. It is a thing. People want to see how many different birds they can see in a year. So there's that. And also, yeah, it just gets really acquisitive in a way, which is different than appreciating nature for what it is. But yeah, I'm hoping this winter to see several birds that I haven't seen in a long time. One is a snowy owl. If any listener has seen a snowy owl this winter, please give us a call at 608-879-8255. There have been a lot of snowy owls in the Green Bay area. There have also been a lot of snowy owls seen around the Devil's Lake area, I think. Also golden eagles seen in the Devil's Lake area. I'd love to see them. Mm. Sometimes they're... they're seen in western Wisconsin, golden eagles. So those are two big birds I want to see this winter. And then there's smaller birds that are coming down from Canada, two in the grosbeak family. We know the rose-breasted grosbeak in the spring in May, the beautiful pink triangle in the throat, black and white on the back. They come to your bird feeder sunflower seeds in the spring with Baltimore Orioles. But in the winter, their cousins, the pine grosbeak, which is pink and black and white, are coming down, and evening grosbeaks, which are yellow and black and white. So if you're in like Minocqua or up in Hayward, you might be certainly Bayfield and Washburn, you'll be seeing those kinds of Canadian finches that are coming down. But it's been a big migration south. So even here in Dane County, I'm waiting to see the first evening grosbeaks or pine grosbeaks that are supposed to be coming down. So that's part of the fun of winter for me, is seeing these winter birds come down. We've got a call from Dick in Madison. Dick, what do you got for us?
Lake Monona is pretty much frozen. It just skinned over kind of in the last day or so.
Okay.
Also, I think I've told you in the past, I used to live in the Arboretum until the early 2000s through the 90s, and you brought up one that I hadn't seen since I was a kid. And we had it twice in the spring, an oriole that, you know, they have that hanging nest that kind of looks like a beehive. And it was crazy. And then we'd see egrets down there, which was pretty, I had never noticed them before, but several different years.
Yeah, thanks, Dick, from Madison. Yeah, the amazing thing, when I came to Madison 43 years ago, I'd never seen sandhill cranes in the wild. I'd never seen swans, and, you know, there's sandhill cranes all over Dane County, now all over Wisconsin. I'd never seen a wild turkey in the wild. Now there are wild turkeys, you know, throughout where Dick lives in the Arboretum. They'll practically run you down. And I have wild turkeys in my house just a few miles south of Madison. So it's amazing what you can see. Egrets, the American egret or the great egret, as it's called, in the late summer, marshes and little ponds in Dane County, you can see dozens of them, beautiful white herons. So it's just a tremendous place to to live. When I was interviewing for a job here in Madison to work at the Progressive when I was just a young whippersnapper editor, one of the key things that made me take the job was one of the employees drove me through the Arboretum where Dick was living.
Wow.
And it was just, and I just said, wow, I could get back into my childhood hobby here, which I had pretty much put on the shelf for a few years. And but it's been a, you know, bird watching is a great hobby for kids, for adults, for retirees. It's just a wonderful, healthy outdoor activity that you can enjoy, whether you're just looking outside at your sparrows and nuthatches and downy woodpeckers and cardinals, or whether you're, you know, driving around looking for the snowy owl or the golden eagle or whatever it is. So to me, it's been a rewarding hobby, and I would commend it to anybody. And you can get a bird book right now instead of the Roger Torrey Peterson guide. Most people have the Sibley guide, S-I-B-L-E-Y, Sibley's guide. That's a bird book. Maybe I'll give that to you, Dom, for the holiday here.
Honestly, yes. And and going back real quick, turkeys, wild turkeys. This was the first time because I just moved to Madison a couple months back, and I had no clue that there were wild turkeys just everywhere. And I, and in fact, I almost hit one because I didn't know, and luckily I stopped. But I had no idea because I'm from Illinois. They're not down there. So it just kind of shocked me. I was like, "Ooh, this is pretty cool. I got to tell my parents this," you know. So
yeah, it is cool. The wild turkey. When I got here, there were no wild turkeys in Wisconsin. They were imported. Oh, yeah. The DNR made an effort to reintroduce turkeys into Wisconsin. Really? It was a native species of Wisconsin, but there were virtually none here 45 years ago, 50 years ago. And so the DNR intentionally brought some back, both for bird watchers and for hunters. And they've made this tremendous comeback, as anyone who drives around can see. And it's wonderful to have them here. And it's wonderful if you're a turkey hunter. I know Mark from Prairie du Sac goes out and does some turkey hunting. I went with my brother-in-law many, many years ago in western Wisconsin. He didn't get it. He was there with his rifle, and I was there with my binoculars. But it was just beautiful just being out. And that's also one of the joys of birdwatching, being out there with the birds and with the wildlife, with the deer. And you never know what you're going to see. So we really
I had no idea that turkeys were like reintroduced into Wisconsin. Here in Milwaukee, you know, you're on the east side, you're close to UWM or Columbia St. Mary's, and like they're all over. And you know, you stop your car and you're delayed and everyone has to wait for them to cross the street. But there's always kind of like jokes about them because, you know, they're so big and massive. But I always thought that they were here because I feel like I've always seen them. I feel like I've seen them a lot more recently on the east side areas, but I had no idea.
Yeah, it was a very successful reintroduction. Catherine on the text line wonders if the cranes were reintroduced too. I think the cranes just proliferated on their own over the last 20 years or so. There weren't that many. They're really common right now on campus. You know, you can see them crossing the street. And it's a wonderful thing because I came from Illinois too, Dom, and we didn't have sandhill cranes in Illinois. We didn't have tundra swans. We didn't have wild turkey. So it's amazing what you can see here in Dane County and across Wisconsin, a great place for bird watching. I think the tourist agency and Governor Evers' office should play up the bird watching more. It'd be great for our economy. Yeah. I don't want them to scare away the good birds, but, you know, I'm Matt Rothschild. I've been speaking with Angela Lang of Block, my co-host, and Dom, our producer. We'll be right back. You can call with your bird sightings, 608-879-8255.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
And who wouldn't want to fly like an eagle? I sure would. Matt Rothschild here, co-hosting with Angela Lang on the John and Gordy Morning Show. They'll be back this afternoon from 2 to 5 all across the Civic Media Radio Network. But it's been a lot of fun to be with you, Angela, this morning and to be with our callers and texters.
Also, shout out to Dom for always like having the good music transitions. I clock it. I notice it. I want to acknowledge it.
Appreciate that. I appreciate that. Thank you.
It is
got
a
Free Bird, Leonard Skinner, you know, Steve Miller.
I saw that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Is Thank a skill. And he hustled all sorts of audio for me this morning on very short deadline. So grateful for Dom, who
works
with me on our podcast here for Civic Media, Wisconsin Forward, where I've interviewed a lot of the candidates. Where do you think that governor's race is right now, Angela?
You know, I feel like I haven't heard a lot of people talking about it recently. I feel like every time there's a new candidate, there's like buzz and gossip and all the group chats blow up. And then it kind of like fizzles. And then it's like, oh, something tragic happened. Oh, the Hannah Dugan trial. So I'll be curious to see when things really start to ramp up. I will say that I received my first two mail pieces from a candidate.
Really? Do you want to say which candidate that was?
Mandela Barnes.
There you go. I was surprised that Joel Brennan joined the race, and I'm not all that familiar with him. He's from Milwaukee. He was in the Evers administration, head of Department of Administration for a while, and he's done work at, what, Greater Milwaukee or whatever that organization is? And why is he running? It was just, there's just so many people and I don't know what his lane is there, and he just threw his hat in. So I'm just wondering what you thought of that. You're in Milwaukee, you probably know him better than I do.
Yeah, I mean, and that's the thing, not well. Like, I know the name, I'm fairly familiar, but I think I said this before, I'm really glad that there is a robust primary. I do think it makes everybody kind of stronger, and it you know, I think provides just more opportunities for more voices, and it moves conversations along and issues along. But that was my big question with him, was like, okay, what is your path, right? I feel like everyone is starting to kind of create their own lanes or cut their own brands. And I'm not sure where his path is in comparison to other folks. Just because I don't know doesn't mean he doesn't know, right? He could, you know, be the underdog and surprise a whole bunch of folks. And just because I don't understand it or see it now doesn't negate his candidacy, but I did think it was interesting.
I also think it's a kind of a crowded lane that he's in, because it's kind of the lane that Missy Hughes is in, and to some extent Sarah Rodriguez. So I have an odd thought on this race, and that is, the more candidates, especially establishment candidates, that are in the race, the better it is for Francesca Hong, because she has carved out. You know, I'm the Democratic Socialist. I'm the only one who's a tenant right now. I work in the restaurant industry. I can really relate to your problems, everyday Wisconsinites' problems. And she's getting some enthusiasm from the progressive base and from young people, and her social media presence is really smart. And
I was just gonna say it. All the comments on her social media posts. Yeah, and sometimes it's not even her post. I will not name names here, but there will be other candidates that will post something and it'll be on their campaign page. And they're like, Francesca Hong all the way. So it's interesting. And I'm curious too, because social media is huge, but I'm curious to see how that translates offline and in real life too to votes.
Yeah, I'm just telling political reporters, do not underestimate Francesca Hong. You may be surprised. And I think she has a copyright infringement suit to go against, and this is a joke, on Mandela Barnes, because I saw Mandela Barnes use a slogan that Francesca Hong has been using, make better possible. All of a sudden, Mandela Barnes was saying, we can make better possible. So I don't know. They're going to have to hash that one out. But yeah.
I mean, it's a good line, though.
It's a good line. It's a good slogan. And I totally agree with you. It is important to have primaries with a lot of good candidates. And the Democrats should be proud of the slate here. You know, I would hear complaints over the years, oh, there's no bench for the Democrats. Hey, there's a great bench right now. These candidates, many of these candidates that are running are really qualified, could do a great job as governor of Wisconsin. We've got a tremendous slate of candidates, and they just need to hash it out. And you, the listener, you, the voter, should try to get as much information as you can on each candidate. And Dom and I interviewed 6 or 7 of them already.
We did.
We've got a feeler out to Mandela Barnes. I'm going to get a feeler out to Brennan and try to get them here so that people would just go to the Wisconsin Forward podcast and get a lot of information. There are other places they can go. I hope there will be rowdy debates coming
I'm
up
sure there
are,
will be.
That are televised. Because last time I couldn't even find a debate except online. And so I'm hoping that, you know, there will be debates that are televised on Wisconsin Public TV or other places where the mass of citizens here can see them. Because otherwise it's just going to be how much money can you raise and how good are your ads. And that shouldn't be how races are decided. Unfortunately, that's the way it's going. And there's going to be just a vast amount of money, a ridiculous amount of money, because of our campaign finance laws allowing it on both sides, on the Republican side and Democratic side. So we're going to be awash in it again, as we are every election season here in Wisconsin. So, but figure out who your favorite candidate is and make sure you go out and vote in the primaries in August. It's coming up. And then we have the Supreme Court one before that this spring, which is crucial too. Chris Taylor's a great candidate for that. Yeah. Angela Lang, it's been great hosting the show with you again today. I hope we can do it again soon. And I want to thank the callers and the texters and our guests, Dan Barker, Judy Davidoff, Chris Tazelar, and Dom are tremendous producers.
Thank you.
It's been great. All right, once more. He who binds himself to a joy does the winged life destroy, but he who kisses the joy as it flies lives in eternity's sunrise.
The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.